Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. So I am joined by my sister Kay. We're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on season 3 of Dark Matter. We just finished the final two parts of it. This is a show that is based on a 4-issue miniseries that Dark Horse did 2012.
The original premise, going back to that, which I think is kind of interesting, is if all of your memories were wiped, would you be the person you were? How much of us is our experiences and all of that, and how much of us is just sort of innate?
Yeah, the show started out, as did the comic, with six people coming out of like a cryonic sleep thing on a spaceship, not knowing who they are, and it turns out they're like some of the biggest bad guys in the universe or whatever. Now, I say that the show is based on the comic, but the comic really felt like it was done as a vehicle to explore the concept and sell the concept.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I think it was originally meant to be a TV show all along. And I'm not saying that's good or bad or whatever. It's just that's the sense I get. Because the two guys who did it are guys that were behind the TV show Stargate SG-1. And I don't know that they have done any other comics before or since. Mm-hmm. I'd have to check because I don't know, but I don't recall them doing it.
And here's a question for you, though. Do you think that comic audiences are more willing to try out new concepts and different concepts than, say, a TV audience? Or to give these concepts an opening chance?
That's a great question. It's a tough one to answer because the comic audience seems very much wanting, in some cases, more of the same. You know, just give me another Batman, another Superman, another X-Men, another Avenger. And another part of that comic audience is wanting something new and different and not wanting more of the same. Mm-hmm. With TV, I think really in both cases, TV and comics, there's the expectation of new properties, new material on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I think it's lower risk for the content creators to do comics than TV.
It just seems like with TV, there are a lot of shows that get canceled before you realize they aired.
Yeah.
There have been a couple shows that I set my DVR for, and my DVR says at one point, yes, we're going to record two upcoming episodes, and then suddenly, poof, there are no upcoming episodes set to be recorded.
Yeah, shows are short-lived. For this to have made it 3 seasons with the promise of a fourth.
Yeah.
Or at least the end of the series promises a fourth, whether they get the fourth or not. I'm going to say that they will, because this is a Canadian show. Mm-hmm. And they tend to not get cut off as early.
Yeah.
Even shows that have struggled here in the U.S. that are Canadian-based, Flashpoint, Beauty and the Beast, they've gone for 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah.
So I think there's a definite audience up in Canada for this stuff, and I think it is a good show.
Well, it's definitely exploring not just the action and the adventure, not just the routine sci-fi concepts, but also the psychology and the concept of what makes you you.
The whole sense of identity is definitely played with here a lot. Mm-hmm. They started to get into the concept of free will, destiny, fate quite a bit this season because there was a bit of time travel involved.
There's also been a strong aspect, I'd say even more in the second half of the season than the first, but starting as early as the beginning of the season, with what happens when your memories are returned to you or people start filling in gaps from that missing time.
Sort of a can you go home again?
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you incorporate who you were with who you are?
Well, and how people do and don't change over time.
Yes.
So there, and what I like is, well, sometimes they are fairly upfront by raising those questions explicitly. They've also already explored it some and do so in what feels like a somewhat organic manner. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, they're going back to the well on a lot of these things repeatedly because it's one of the central themes of the show but they do it in different ways. You know, each time they kind of go back to, well, you know, do you have to have your memories or not? Or, you know, when the android gets some of her memories versus 2 versus 4 versus, you mm-hmm. know, there are different paths to go down.
Well, and when 5 is meeting someone for the first time who's never been part of her own life,
mm-hmm.
but because she has other people's memories or has interacted with other people's memories, and so she has an impression of them through those memories.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting thing, too. Just bringing up the whole, you do carry the baggage of your past memories into each encounter, mm-hmm. and you hear things through the filter of that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of those things that because these characters have gone through this experience, people around them, you know, in this case, for Ashido's tutor, Teku was the one who 5 had that reaction to, and he knew about, you know, the shared memory wipe. So he was able to put 2 and 2 together and kind of figure it out. And in doing so, kind of explain it to any newer audience members.
Yeah.
Because 13 episode seasons, we're, you know, 39 episodes in. And this is something that happened literally right before the pilot began.
Yeah.
And we're coming out in the pilot. It starts with 2 people coming out of stasis.
Yeah.
You know, so at times I think they do a really good job with those callbacks and stuff like that. There are other times I think they really don't.
Well, there are times when I want to refer to the show as just this intricately woven piece, and they just sort of pluck a thread and say, hey, look, here's a loose thread. I'm going to tempt you with it, nag you with it. Oh, I think I'll drop it for 4 or 5 episodes the rest of the season. I'll forget I plucked that thread.
Well, the thing I was saying, referring to where they didn't really kind of set it back up was the aliens.
Yes.
Because that was something from 2nd season.
That was something where we spent half of that episode asking one another, am I supposed to be remembering this from this, from that? And finally, we did remember sort of mostly the episode it's from, but we were doing a lot of memory jogs.
I need to rewatch that 2nd season episode.
And that's how I felt.
Because when they dealt with it in 3rd season, I'm like, okay, I vaguely remember it, but the previously on scenes were cryptic enough.
They were too few, too cryptic, and normally my pet peeve with the previously on scenes, and not specifically this show, for most shows,
yeah,
is that those are so long and give you so much that I've actually been sitting with someone who said, wait, I've seen this episode already. And it's, no, wait till they get to the end of previously on, let them start the episode, then you can say that.
That's funny, because I thought the complaint you were going to have is how they take stuff, shift the order around.
Oh, that does drive me nuts. Yes.
Because,
they change the context.
Yeah, the previously on for the final episode, and we'd watched episodes 12 and 13 back to back, had somebody saying, well, have you decided? And somebody pulls a gun. And at the end of 12, which we had just seen moments before, well, have you decided? And there's a back and forth for a bit.
Yeah.
There's an equivocating, there's this, and then they end the episode on the pulling of the gun because it's a dramatic moment. But, I mean, it's a full scene.
There's equivocating, there's her going down to the guy and him apologizing before the gun is pulled.
It wasn't a simple, did you decide, okay, pull the gun and you know, have at it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I hate with Previously On is when they insert into Previously On a line of dialogue that got cut from the episode.
Yes. They essentially lie about what happened previously.
Yes.
And I get how that happens, why that happens, but it's still really annoying.
Previously On is an art form.
Yes.
It rates up there with trailers.
Well, I think it's a little bit more important than a trailer, because a trailer, you just get to sell you on the property.
A trailer is a temptation. A Previously On needs to be a combination of recap and memory jogs.
Yeah, but I remember the days when, both in comics and TV, they didn't do that as a series of clips at the beginning of a TV show or a series of panels with some prose or whatever around it in a comic book. They actually, in the course of the story,
yes,
had to deftly put in what is exposition.
Yes.
And that's why in some cases you would almost have that perennially stupid, now wait a sec, can you explain that to me again, kind of a character.
Yes.
And why they, oh, let's go through the plan one more time.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on. But here, there are a couple of times it's like, okay, I needed that. Oh, I remember who this character is. And if they didn't, then that reveal wouldn't have worked. But again, when they got to that alien one, it's, I don't remember enough of this. You're not giving me enough. It wasn't a memorable enough episode.
When they gave us Will Wheaton and some of the other stuff that happened with two in that episode, the problem was three's subplot from that episode didn't feel interwoven enough with her primary plot from that episode for me to go, oh, yeah, that was the episode those two things both happened in.
Because that was the one where we find out her origin.
Yes.
And that was very memorable.
Exactly.
What was going on elsewhere in the subplot, not so much.
So it was either that episode or it was the one where they went to the tower to steal stuff from that guy. Because it was one of the two Will Wheaton episodes.
Yeah.
And see, that was part of my confusion, was kind of they flashed on Will Wheaton with, hey, remember him? He was the cause of this problem. And it's all because of her origin that three, Boone, got exposed to these aliens. And now I remember him getting taken and tortured with an aquarium of doom. But that's about as specific as I can get.
When you get 13 episodes in rapid succession, it's about a year, 13 episodes. I think when you're referencing something from a previous season, you've got to give a little bit more context and do it both in the story as well as on the previously on.
Yeah.
The other thing this show struggles with, in my opinion, and maybe that's not quite the right way to phrase it, we've got characters that have forgotten who they are. Mm-hmm. We have characters that, in at least two cases, have parallel universe versions of them running around.
Yes.
We have aliens that can take people over.
Mm-hmm.
We have other forms of mind wipe and ways of impersonating people.
We have the clones.
The transit clones.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of ways that the unreliable narrator syndrome kicks in. Mm. And there have been a couple of times where it's like, well, is this the character we know, number one through six or whatever, from the Raza, or is it their parallel universe version, or is it them but they've been taken over, or is it like we have one where it's like somebody's inside their memories,
yeah,
toying around. So it's not even happening. It's a holodeck adventure almost.
Yes. That was an interesting episode to me in terms of how he won the game at the end, if you will.
Oh, yeah, and it was well done, but when I spend half the episode wondering, does this really count? Is this really happening?
Yes.
You know, because we've got one character that for a while was living in a virtual reality situation.
Sarah is a character that I don't feel they handled very well.
I felt that they gave a chunk of her character arc this season, and we're going to get another next season. We got a little before it. But it's one that's getting doled out over the seasons, and therefore it's hard for it to have a really strong narrative thread. When they bring that character back next season, they're going to have to do a previously on that recaps the androids episode where she gets the body and all of this, and it's one of those where it's like, okay, she died, she came back, five saved her, memories, put her in a VR thing, oh, then they took that, tried to get into a body. They got separated from the rest of the crew. She's over here. She's teamed up with the androids. Oh, for the androids, we've got to go back, flashback to this, give you that.
It's the separated from the rest of the crew where they finally hit my breaking point. Why didn't three go with her?
Yeah. There are a couple of times where it's like, I get that you need to do this for narrative purposes, but it feels wrong for the characters.
I'm not even sure for narrative purposes. I mean, three is standing with her pod. And the people who are going to take her to a shuttle, he is going to run the opposite direction to his shell to go to his ship. And he could go with her.
That's my point. He would have gone with her, I think. Yeah. But for whatever reasons, the creator said, no, we don't want that.
Yeah, we want to keep him part of the main show. We don't want to follow their story yet. And if he goes with her, we have to follow their story.
Part of why that rang false is the Roger Cross character, Six, spent the first half of the season off the ship.
Yeah.
To the point of, have they written him out?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Rio, who's gotten his memory back,
yeah,
is off the ship almost full time and isn't even in a number of the episodes.
Yeah.
So could they have taken that character and put him over there on a separate path? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Arguably, they should have.
I mean, they wanted to put him through emotional hell, is my take for why they separated them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But in terms of the path they'd already taken that character down, they had finally taken him from callous and seeming to care about no one but himself to he's learned to care about some other people. He had a great episode where he was caught in a time loop.
It was actually a really good season for that character. Now, the actor we had first encountered on The Listener.
Yeah.
Another Canadian show.
Yeah, he did some Good Witch episodes. He's Anthony Lemke.
Anthony Lemke is a terrific actor, and I think this season, really, he kind of came into his own in a way that he hadn't quite in previous seasons. He was good.
Yeah.
But at this point, he's gotten to that almost Han Solo rogue kind of a character.
Well, at this point in the show, they finally realized, okay, he's been, I don't want to say the stereotypical character, but he's had very few notes to play. And it's time we explored him.
Much more nuanced this time, yeah, this season, to the point of he can say something that one of the other characters knows is just not true, but he's saying it to seem a little callous, to seem indifferent, to play the facade. And they'll kind of question and poke at it, like, you know I don't believe that. And he does a, you know, he goes a little further with it, but it's like, yeah, I know you don't believe it, but give it to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a...
Well, the time loop episode, one of the things I loved was day after day after day in that one, he's making the effort to console Five about Six having left the ship. And he's screwing it up every time. No matter what he says, it's wrong.
I think it's less that it's wrong than she doesn't want to hear it from him.
There's definitely an aspect of she doesn't want to hear it from him. She's a teenager. She doesn't want to hear it, period. She's not in a headspace to hear anything. Well, and she doesn't
think he's sincere.
Yes. But when he finally sits down and simply says, I wish I knew something to say.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what to say to make you feel better, but I want to.
Yes.
And it's that honesty with her.
Yes. Oh, it was a great scene.
Well, and one that I thought was a bit of a callback when Two has been taken and she goes to him basically saying, don't give up on her. Because at this point, they think she's dead.
Yeah.
So there was some callbacks there. The one thing I would have liked to have seen, they did the Groundhog's Day kind of an episode. Most shows, sci-fi do it eventually. It made sense. It worked. He learns French in the process.
Yes.
I would have loved for once an episode after that for him to just out of the blue spout something off in French.
That would have been funny.
Of just a, you've got to be kidding me, you know, kind of.
Well, one of the things I loved in that episode was he reaches a point where after all these days of nobody has been believing him, that's going over and over, he does something different. Well, every day he's been trying to do different things, but he does something different and it accidentally gets one of the other people caught up in the loop and aware of it. And he's just so excited that someone else is stuck repeating their day.
Well, because we got two new characters for part of the season.
True. Yes.
And one of them was the guy who had taken over kind of the business of the Ra's'a's handler.
Yeah.
That was played by David Hewitt from Stargate Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming the plan was always to use him for this, but maybe he wasn't available.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. He would have done well.
He would have.
But I liked how they played with this other character in his place without him seeming completely redundant. And in a way that if they brought the original character back, they could have a lot of fun with it. It's like, I never empowered him to do all of this.
Yes.
I've been on the run. Somebody took my resources.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some fun stuff they could do.
Yeah.
But there are enough times where they played a little fast and loose as to what's going on, should I believe it? And they've got so many major plot threads going on.
Well, the war that was going on, they kind of drove the whole season. I lost track of how many factions there were.
Every corporation was its own faction. It was hard to keep track of, is Ferris the good guy, is Mickey the bad guy? Wait, no, I got that backwards, it's the other way. All right, we've got the Empire that Rio's in charge of. We've got the Raza, we've got this other faction, a few other players and stuff.
We've got the...
And on the one hand, it's a fully realized universe in that respect.
Oh, true. But, I mean, we've got the Alliance of Planets. I forget the correct phrase for it.
Kind of the League of Autonomous Worlds or there whatever it go. Is.
Yeah. And we've got the colonies. They're trying to kind of upgrade into that.
Yeah.
I mean, my head was just kind of spinning with, okay, maybe you could have waited till season 5 or 6 when we had clearly identified, like at this point I kind of have a clue who Ferris is, and I kind of have a clue who Mickey is, and this the Empire
goes back to having that character of, wait a sec, I'm confused, I thought we were aligned with these guys, no, let me give you the geography or political lesson again.
Yeah,
you know, and they've got a couple of characters they could have done that with.
Yeah,
so trying to do as much as they did, little over eager by and large, yeah, it worked okay.
When I think what left me a little baffled was the GA.
The Global Alliance.
The Galactic Authority. Galactic
Authority, sorry.
Which seemed to be a Galactic Authority with no... It was always in the hands of the
corporations.
But it... Trying to think how I'll phrase it. It didn't seem to be cooperative with anyone, if that makes sense.
It was only visible when we needed something for the colonies to fight against or something like that. Once we got past that point, it was all about the corporations, not the GA.
Yeah.
So, again, a lot of factions to keep track of.
Yeah.
And with enough of, again, I think the narration was reliable in those respects. But there's enough kind of head scratching of, wait, where do we leave this off? All right, this is the android. Oh, she's got the emotion chip, so she passes as human. Oh, wait, no. This is a different episode. She actually is a human, and the android was based on that character. Mm. So she's playing multiple roles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the number of lead actors that have only played one role.
Yeah.
Is just about zero.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, if you discount the pre and post memory wipe, you've still got Anthony Lemke playing Boone from the Ultimate Universe and
three.
Can I never get the numbers right?
Yeah, that's hard.
You've got 2 and Portia.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the android and now the creator.
Yeah.
You've got 4. 5.
I was going to say 4 in Rio.
4. But that's just the time, the pre post memory. I was saying, discounting that.
All right, kind of.
You had the 2 number ones.
Yes.
Which we haven't had all season, which is fine. But 5, I'm willing to bet when we find the sister, I'm willing to bet it's a twin.
But we've also seen future 5.
Yes. I was just thinking concurrently in the universe where you could have the 2 standing side by side.
Yeah.
So it does get a little confusing there. And the episode types go from, let's do a hardcore sci-fi time travel with the blink drive or something like that, to a, let's do kind of the intergalactic politics with the corporations, and every once in a while, a little bit more of a character-based story.
We did some interesting stuff with the blink drives, though. I mean,
it was fun. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it.
We not only time traveled, but I was thinking about the one at the space station.
They're in a space station where the Rio's people are trying to fix the blink drive, essentially create a bubble reality that's shrinking on them.
Yeah.
Which is something we have seen in Trek shows.
Yeah.
And again, nothing right or wrong about that.
No, it's just...
They went a different way and it worked, you know. I did think they cheated a little when, and I guess it was last season, they blinked to the other reality and back, bringing an entire marauder full of people.
Yeah.
Because Wexler is the alternate timeline version, too.
Yes, yeah.
It's just, it's hard to, you need a scorecard at times for the show.
Yeah.
And I like the show. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's got some wit to it. It's got some sensibility of style and comedy and sci-fi. Concepts are solid. But I do look at some other shows wondering, it's like, well, they didn't last as long. Yet this seems to be kicking on with no problem. And I'm not saying it's an inferior show.
No, it's just intriguing. And, I mean, I liked some of what they did with Sarah in the alternate reality,
mm-hmm.
in the virtual reality, I should say. Yeah,
virtual reality versus parallel reality versus alternate or bubble reality. That's my point. It gets confusing.
They definitely did some interesting stuff with her there.
Well, and it went towards the identity crisis of, is she real if she's not flesh and blood? If she doesn't have a physical essence.
Yeah.
But it's her memory.
Well, but then they took that step further of, okay, is she real? If we take all of that that was in the virtual reality and download it into an android body that looks like what her body used to look mm-hmm. like, and now we're somehow going to prop her up as the queen of the androids.
Yeah, I think at this point we've got the alien invasion at the end of the season. It's going to be a big threat next time with the black ships.
Yeah.
We've got the war with the androids that seems inevitable now, particularly given the new emotion ship helper program saying, yeah, these people are such pesky things, we need to wipe them out.
Yeah, we need to wipe out humanity. Don't worry.
Those are two major threats looming.
Yeah, and then in subplot land, we need to go find Porsche's kid and Five's sister.
Mm-hmm.
We did go find Six's wife and kid and see that they're living happily ever after, as if he never happened.
So we've gotten a little bit of closure on one or two of the characters, but we've also got to resolve the corporate war and I think the Empire.
You know, it's interesting in terms of character arc, character path. Two has definitely become a better person
mm-hmm.
versus what we believe Portia Lynn to have been. She's probably had one of the smoother paths through the course of the three seasons.
I suppose if you exclude being spaced, she's had a rough time, but...
But I'm comparing it to, like, Six, who found out that he had unwittingly been a mass murderer.
I think she's had a reasonably smooth one, except for finding out about her past and being an engineered form, or re-engineered form. Finding recently about the other part of her path, where she was at that outpost or whatever.
Mm.
And then the bomb being dropped by Rio of, oh yeah, and you have a daughter.
Mm.
So I think they're ramping her story up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But she needed to be kind of the calm center for a lot of it because she was the leader of the crew.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Six was always the one who, why can't we use our power for good? Pretty much from the start.
Yeah.
You know, so finding out, okay, he had been the equivalent of a police officer, tried to be an honest one, was infuriated that he had been tricked and deceived
mm-hmm.
into leaving a bomb. All of those things played and stayed true to what we knew of his character.
Agreed. So I think his core being is in line more or less with who he was. He just went down a bad path.
Mm-hmm.
However, with Two, you look at her and Portia and how different they act and are.
Mm.
And to me, there's an aspect of innate character traits that are common, but expressed so wildly differently.
Well, I would be curious to see how they write Six with his memories, especially pre-dropping the bomb, in terms of he comes across, I love how they write him, because he comes across as a fascinating mix of confident in what is right, but not confident in himself.
One of the things I think would be interesting for them to do, and it'd be hard to pull off satisfactorily, but as the tail end of the series, have somebody essentially find a recording of their last mission before going into suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And do we watch it? Do we not? Nope, let's not. And you could even do it midway through a series and stuff and just, okay, don't do it. We've got it. Do we look at it? The group decides not to. Somebody deletes it, followed by somebody, and we never know who, watching it. And, I mean, actually, they could have done that before they gave Rio his memory back.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not a bad guy. I'd like to be that guy. Let's get my memory back. But it would have given us a chance to see these characters the other way.
Yeah.
And we've gotten some of that. And I don't need a lot of that.
Well, I mean, we're allegedly seeing Boone a bit and Portia a bit that way.
But I think those two are also another plot line they've got to resolve at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was teasing you at the end of the final episode of the season of who do you think is in contract renegotiations?
Yes, yes.
And I loved your initial answer.
Well, NSMer, who was a guest star, Wexler from the alternate reality, he's on the ship helping fly it and stuff in the battle, and I'm like, I think he's in the best spot.
Yes.
And he's a recurring guest star, but also one who was a lead on The Listener.
Yes.
So he's worked with Lemke before.
He was a great, great character over on The Listener.
We kind of refer to him at times as the Canadian Greg Grunberg.
Yes.
The kind of actor that's solid, but not, I don't say not leading man potential, but the type that tends to be cast more as the best friend, the guy next door, the co-worker, that sort of a thing.
The guy you want as your best friend.
The everyman.
As the guy next door. Yeah. The guy you want to rely on because he just gives that vibe of, don't worry, I'll be there for you.
Yeah. And both guys, Greg Grunberg and Ennis Emmer, do a great job with that sort of a thing. I do think it'd be funny if they teamed up as like Private Eyes or something on a show. And their basic gist is just insinuating themselves or whatever in places.
You know, though, that reminds me from Leverage of Hardison. That used to crack me God, up.
When their hacker guy would basically insinuate himself in an office, large corporation, he'd be there for the parties and getting to know everybody because he's got a very solo stay in the van kind of a job. So the social interaction was great for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, but it's stuff like that in the writing that makes you fall in love with a show.
Well, and that's one of the things I really like about Dark Matter is the character interplay is pretty good. We see the progression of stuff when Three comes along on a mission. It's like, you don't need to be here. It's like, I figured I'd come. They get captured. I didn't need to be here. That's what we told you. You should have been more emphatic.
Yes, yes.
You know, again, the interplay. I really want to know what Lemke's going to do after this.
Mm.
I think he would make a fascinating Robin Hood.
Yes, he would.
He's got that kind of Errol Flynn swashbuckler kind of devil may care almost attitude.
Yeah.
That kind of a character for him could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Here, again, it's easy to say, oh, he's the Han Solo sort of a character. He is and he isn't. You know, it's not that it's derivative, but he's got that. You know, again, when somebody said, I'll give you more money than you could spend in a lifetime, I really expected him to say I could spend a lot in a lifetime.
Yes. Well, it's funny because, you know, we obviously are fans of Firefly. He fills the role Jane had on Firefly of you need the guy with the guns who's the muscle on the mission.
You know, it's funny because he's a little bit Jane from Firefly. He's a little bit Wash from Firefly with the humor and devil may care attitude or whatever and the lightheartedness. And the are we sure we really want to do this?
Yeah.
He's also just a little bit of Mal. Because he's sometimes the voice of reason and let's do this. And somebody needs to get shot, he'll shoot him.
Yeah.
And he's grown and evolved, but stayed true to himself.
I did not expect that character to either grow or evolve when we first met him.
He's a hell of a lot more likable now than he was.
Oh, he is. I'm very impressed that the writers could grow and evolve that character.
Well, I give a lot of it to them, but also I think Lemke himself has been able to kind of relax the character a little bit.
Yes.
And just some of it with the body language, he'll kick his feet up on the desk. Sometimes somebody will glare at him, he'll put it down. Sometimes he won't put him down.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that.
I thought he did a really great job with the, oh, by the way, Sarah's in virtual reality and she'd like to see you.
Yes.
And the scenes that came after that.
He had a lot to work with this season.
Yeah.
You know, was he responsible for his wife's death? She's now not dead. Does he want to go see her? Is he being selfish when she's stuck in there and he's not? You know, it's so many different angles.
Yeah.
And it's fun because you never quite know what direction they're going to go next sometimes.
Yeah. Well,
and I like that.
For a while, I thought Sarah was going to try and take over the android.
There is a persistent who can you trust sort of a thing. And pretty much nobody is often the answer because everybody's betrayed them at one point or another.
That's true. Well, Five, I think, has been fairly reliable.
And that worries me.
I was going to say, if you discount the fact that she originally stole the blink drive, which has been the root of most of their problems.
Yeah.
But
well, and that actress is only about 6 years younger than the one who plays Two.
She does a great job.
But she's playing a character who feels at least 10 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
And she can do the kind of panicked, oh my God, everything's gone, what do I do, kind of lost, doe-eyed sort of a thing, and then turn around with a steely determination. It's like, you don't get to tell us to go abandon these people or something like that.
Yeah.
She's got some great range. She's really knocking it out of the park at times here.
Yeah. Well, she does just such a wonderful job with that teenage awe, wonder, naivete, but also the determination. And I almost want to say that belief that most teenagers have of she feels not necessarily indestructible, but confident that if they'll work together, they can do anything.
There's a certain optimism.
Yeah.
She adds a lot to the show.
Yeah.
Because she's coming at it from a different viewpoint, she's got some very clever ideas.
Well, and she humanizes every character on board.
Yeah. She is kind of the teen genius done right.
Yeah.
And the fact that she is, as an actress, very emotive, and as a character, a very feeling character.
Yeah.
And comfortable with her feelings.
Well, it's funny, because how many times have we seen the premise of bachelor, either male or bachelorette female, you know, suddenly gets custody unexpectedly, and they're unprepared for of a, you know, one kid, five kids, whatever you want to say. Everything
from, you know, the Family Affair show back in the day.
Yes.
To, you know, My Two Dads and other shows of its ilk.
Yeah. You know, but in most of those, one of the things that they try to bring out is kids, whether they mean to or not, they kind of grow up the adult. You become more responsible in being responsible for this other person, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And that's something that by having five on the ship, she does for all of these other characters.
I would almost like to see a episode in which, and I'm not quite sure how they could work it, but with the blink drive, I think they could do this. What would time have been like if, say, five didn't exist?
Yeah.
You know, does my life matter sort of episode for each one of them?
Yeah.
Because it could just be the sort of thing, if somebody's got to put the blink drive, you know, it's going critical, somebody's got to go stop it, but whoever does runs the risk of getting nullified from existence.
Mm-hmm.
And each one, oh, my life doesn't matter, I'll go do it. And finding some way to kind of show the audience that in every case, the universe would be worse off.
Yeah.
And then it's a question of, well, which do you pick? And then somebody would have the out of the box, oh, nobody needs to do it, we can do this instead.
Yeah.
You know, what if we wiped out somebody we didn't like and is definitely bad for the universe?
Yeah.
Not sure who would qualify as that, but...
Wexler
or Portia or Boone.
Yeah, there you go.
Actually, that would be funny if you had that sort of a thing, tricked Boone and Portia into doing it because they're not of this universe, it probably wouldn't affect them.
No, that's kind of funny.
That's the sort of...
Yeah.
But they're the same. They're different identity crisis in things that this show tends to play with.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it is.
The whole concept of do I matter and what would the universe be like without me feels natural to this show.
It does. Definitely.
And I like how they play with those ideas. It's a fun show. It's one that I think the initial premise felt a little limiting.
Mm-hmm.
Has not turned out to be so.
No. I mean, I love watching Six look for a way to make the universe better, to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
He's floundering, but he's trying. And I love the effort.
Yeah. Well, and he's also one of the characters that I think would be the funnest to see. How do the writers of the show think the universe would have played without him?
Mm.
Well, if he's not there, they don't have the bomb. They don't have the bomb. All these people live. Oh, wait, that's a bad thing. How?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm curious how many more seasons we have of this, because they've certainly got more than they can resolve in another season. So I'm assuming at least two more. I'm not sure how much more I want or need, and I don't mean that either high or low.
Yeah.
I just, if they're telling fun stuff and they keep the actors, you know, by and large, because they rotate people in and out.
Yeah, like Nyx.
Nyx, Teku this season. The other girl from the royal court.
Yes.
The two that were,
Yeah, the bodyguard and the handler.
The bodyguard and the handler, coming in.
I liked the bodyguard.
like the bodyguard, not so much the handler.
Yeah.
But they keep enough of the core cast that it doesn't feel like, wow, there's just this rapid turnover.
Yeah.
But they get some fresh blood and some different stuff every season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good. I just question, who should they bring in next and what do they add to the mix?
Mm-hmm.
I think Wexler is the obvious choice.
Mm-hmm.
And while I like the actor, I don't know what his character brings to the mix that would be advantageous.
Well, we're back in the do we trust him, do we not, as if we need another character of questionable and dubious can we trust status.
He feels too much like an early three.
Yes.
Funny thing they could do.
Hmm.
Bring him on board under one condition.
Hmm.
Memory wipe.
Hmm. That would be funny.
We've got a slot for a number seven here.
That would be funny. Yeah.
They could almost do it with bringing him kind of out of amnesia or whatever with, we've wiped your memory, just to see if he plays along with it. Because you know he'd be looking there thinking, okay, so who are you guys? That would be funny.
Yeah.
That would be funny. He would be a good addition to the show in terms of actors, though.
Yeah.
The special effects stuff, by and large, really well done. Mm-hmm. I thought, particularly here at the end, the scenes we were seeing of the Emperor's place, the palace.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
The fight scenes where they had three or four, you know, groups of spaceships going at it and stuff. Very well done. By and large, I think they've used their special effects budget well.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of places I thought they had some very strategic cost-saving measures, the transit pods being one.
Mm.
Basically take a tanning booth, relabel it, and hey, you know, but it's a clever approach. It works. It's fun.
Yeah.
It adds to the universe.
You know, yeah, but I also thought they used it really well with three for the return.
Yeah, they did. I was going to say, there are a couple of different ways they could have gone with that. Wait, I would have cloned and sent the clones down in, like, the Marauder, the shuttle, so he doesn't know they're clones.
Hmm. Well, there is that option, but they want him to know where the Raza was.
Right.
Because Raza had the blank drive.
There are ways they could play that.
But, I mean...
Well, when he used the transit pods to take over the ship.
Yeah.
Rio and stuff. There were some clever aspects.
Yeah. I mean, three knew or should realize that when he asked Sarah about the whole Rio seems to have been keeping something from me, she didn't seem to reveal whatever it might be.
Do you think Rio was lying that the cause of her sickness was essentially the radioactive material Boone had been stockpiling at the house?
It made sense.
It made sense. He may even believe it. The impression I'd gotten from the scene in another episode where she seemed to be remembering some stuff or whatever implied that she and Rio had some other secret.
See, I thought she and Rio had a secret based on that scene. But what I got out of what Three did at the end with the transit pods was he made a conscious decision. He didn't want to remember the conversation with Rio.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was why I liked the use of the transit pods there. Because I was like, you know, that's an interesting conscious decision that character made.
He's at the point where he's been told information that fundamentally changes how he sees certain things, decides he doesn't want to retain that, essentially commits suicide.
Mm.
Do you see that as a sign of strength or weakness of the character?
Honestly, a bit of weakness on some regards, but I actually see it as growth in other respects.
I can see it both ways.
I mean, I see it as growth because if he was still the callous, self-centered guy we met in the pilot, then that new knowledge wouldn't have affected him at all.
Yeah, there's no way he could pretend not to know that. And he knew he was better off not knowing that.
Yeah.
What surprised me in that scene, he's going down the hallway, he's got a gun in each hand, guards are behind him saying, hey, stop, freeze. He turns and doesn't shoot.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that too.
Because it's not like he was going to go down fighting.
Yeah.
He just wanted to go down.
With a smile on his face.
Yeah, well, because again, he got what he wanted.
Yeah.
It was the equivalent of a death by cop kind of suicide.
Yeah.
Again, he's becoming a more nuanced character.
Yeah.
And he was the one, I think, in need of it the most.
Yes.
I think there's still some growth that Six needs to go through to get over kind of the do-gooder cop attitude.
Six has so much guilt that it cripples any self-confidence he has.
Yeah.
And that's where I think he needs some development and growth. And he needs a win next season that helps him over that hump in some fashion.
Well, he needs a big win because he just had a major loss. He just let the black ships in. He would blame himself for that.
Does it's he
the
know
second
that?
Bomb. Well, it depends if he lived.
Well, but I'm wondering if he accidentally went through to the other side.
I think he may have, and either they used it to bounce back or the bomb was set to bounce it back.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's dead. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I hope he's not. He's a good actor.
Yeah, Roger Cross is fantastic.
He's one that if they chose to write out, they've gotten out to do that. I hope they don't.
Second that.
But it is one of those that they have enough things in jeopardy that they could go in a couple of different directions. Lemke and the one who plays two, whose name I'm blanking on.
Melissa O'Neill, I think.
Yes. Again, doing a great job. Those are the two, I think, of the regulars have the best security. I got two characters each.
Well, there is that.
Twice the security of the others. When we were at Comic-Con, we made it past the Dark Horse booth as they were doing, finishing up a signing from the cast. And the actor for Rio was there, the actor for Six.
No, not Six this year.
No, you're right. You're right. It was Lemke.
Yeah.
Alex Mallari Jr., who plays Rio. Uh-huh. And then it was
Joelle Furlan,
who plays Five. And then
Melissa O'Neill. Mm-hmm. Roger Cross was there last year.
Yeah. Well, and we saw it about halfway through the season when it was looking like he was getting written out. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know. But nice that they were not only at the con, but at the Dark Horse booth.
Yes. Yeah.
I am a little surprised Dark Horse hasn't been doing more with the property, but they have enough. I don't know if it's ownership or not, but they're involved in the show.
Oh, that's cool.
At least to some degree, whether it's just as a licensee of the material or what, I don't know. I'd have to go look that up.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be fun to see some other comics fleshing out backstory or behind the scenes stuff or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's some definite additional material that they could tell stories on.
Yeah.
So, fun show. I recommend it. It's a little different than some other shows. It's not hardcore sci-fi. It's got a bit of a sense of humor. It's got, again, that intergalactic politics or whatever.
Definitely politics.
And it's a little bit more of a cerebral show.
Yeah.
Not, oh my god, technobabble, but if you don't pay attention, you can get a little, wait, which character is that? Should I believe them? Wait, who is that in there now?
Yeah.
But that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
So definitely would recommend it. Looking forward to a fourth season based on how they ended this. Could be a lot more action adventure.
Yeah.
Which would be a lot of fun. So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.